what's happening? Why you do it? Why are you in this situation? And they say, well, the problem is our descendant is not performing pinda. You know what pinda is? It's like shraddha. You know, the shraddha ceremony. So he's not performing pinda. And because when you perform pinda, you save your parents from hell. You can send them to a place called Pitri Loka. Pitri Loka is like a vacation spot for your parents after they die. So what happens is, just like when your parents retire, you're going to support them, right? No?
His parents are going to get a retirement benefit, so he's going to enjoy that.
He's going to enjoy it. He's going to try to get the inheritance. So you're going to support your parents, isn't it? When they get older, you'll take care of them. And just like Vrindavan's son is taking care of him. It's very nice, isn't it? Will you do the same thing?
No.
He said
That's
no.
That's not in his plan, probably.
That's not in his plan.
He's wrong.
So getting back to the story, that's what it means to do pinda, because you're actually giving pious activities to your ancestors. So this group of people hanging down over the well didn't have someone who was doing pinda for them. And so this he said to them, all right, who is your descendant who's not doing the pinda? And they said, our descendant's name is Jarakaru. And he said, uh-oh, that's me. And they said, better you do the pinda, but in order to do the pinda, you have to be married. And Jarakaru said, oh, my God. He wasn't married. He's a brahmachari. So he just thought about it, felt so guilty after a few minutes, that he said, all right, I'll get married only if I can marry someone who has the same name as me. He was very tricky. Very, very tricky. And it has to be someone who never talks back to me, or else I'm leaving them immediately.
I don't think anyone in India.
No one in India. Take some water. So he says, let me take some water first. So there's all this incense.
He made the girl do the pinda.
So what happened is that there was this nice snake guy. His name was Vasuki.
Oh, Vasuki.
And Vasuki, he was very concerned. He was very concerned because he had a sister named Jarakaru. And why was he very concerned? He wanted to get her married. Obviously, you don't want your sister to be single her whole life. So he was just thinking,
I don't want to be responsible for painting
something. All right. So he was very concerned to arrange for his sister. Not that you should do that. To arrange for his sister's marriage. And so what he did is he knew that there was this sage named Jarakaru, and he went and he said to him, I have a girl for you. And Jarakaru said, I'm not married anywhere unless their name is actually the same as mine. So he said yes, and Jarakaru said, oh my God, why did I have to do this? Anyway, so he got married and his wife was pregnant, but one day he was sleeping a little bit too late, because the brahmanas are supposed to do sacrifices at different times of the day. You know the sanjas? You know what a sanja is?
Sanja.
You know, the evening, sunrise, that's the beginning of the day, middle of the day, and the sunset. So he didn't wake up in time, and his wife wanted to wake him up. So she said to him gently, Prabhu, or Pati Dave, or Swami. You know, these are different names a wife would use for a husband in the Vedic culture. And then, please, you need to wake up. And he got angry. He said, ah, you aggravated me. I'm leaving.
So he just needed an excuse.
So he was just looking for an excuse to leave home. So he left home. And she said, well, you're supposed to give me a child. And she was already pregnant. And he said, basically, Astika, it will be. Astika, it will be. And that was the famous Astika who interfered with the sacrifice of Maharaj Janamajaya. Maharaj Janamajaya was the son of Maharaj Parikshit. Remember the story?
Oh, yeah. Janamajaya.
And he wanted to kill all the snakes. Because the snake, Takshaka, had killed his father. So therefore, he started to do this sarpa yajna to kill all the snakes. And while he was doing the sarpa yajna, Takshaka was being protected by Indra. And so then he began to pronounce the mantra under the direction of the brahmanas. Let Indra fall into the fire along with Takshaka. But at the same time, this Jarakaru came along. And because he was a Brahmin, they had to respect him. So Maharajanamajaya said, oh, my dear Brahmin, what do you want? And Astika said, stop the sacrifice. And as a result of that, the snakes didn't all get killed. And they all lived happily ever after.
Did he go after Vasuki?
Did he go after Vasuki? He went over after all the snakes. Vasuki was a good snake. Some of the snakes are really bad, like Takshaka. He's really bad. And you know the snakes, do you know who the snake's mother was?
Yes.
Who? Starts with a K.
Yeah, Kadru.
Kadru. And who was Garuda's mother? Starts with a V.
Vinata.
And who was the father?
Kashyapa.
Very nice. And how many snakes were born?
100
snakes. Oh, you know that whole story.
So
he knows the story.
Why was Indra protecting Takshaka?
Because they were friends.
Oh,
that's in the Mahabharata, actually. They were actually friends, and somehow or other they made friendship. And Indra, there's a whole story of why Takshaka was so angry with the Pandavas and their descendants. Really interesting story. The interesting story is once upon a time, when the Pandavas were sent to Indraprastha, you know, they were sent to Indraprastha, and it was a desert and everything like that, there was a forest there. Then what happened is that Agni Dev, the god of fire, approached the Pandavas and Krishna, and he said, I'm sick. I have a stomachache. And the reason he had a stomachache, does anyone know the story?
Somewhere? Yeah, there was sacrifice.
There was a sacrifice, and for 12 years they were pouring ghee into his mouth. You know, swaha for 12 years. And so Agni was just like, I need some herbal medicine, some Ayurvedic medicine here. So this medicine was the Kandava forest. And so therefore, Arjuna was asked by Agni Dev to burn down the Kandava forest. So Arjuna and Krishna proceeded to burn down the Kandava forest, and while they were burning down the Kandava forest, of course they had to make sure that nobody escaped. So Krishna had his Sudarshan Chakra there, and Arjuna had his arrows, and basically Takshaka had his home in that Kandava forest. But Takshaka was out, you know, somewhere else at that point, but his wife and children were there.
The children
and the wife got killed.
No,
oh.
But one kid escaped and then he came as incarnate arrow.
No, Takshaka, no.
No, Takshaka's son.
Takshaka, no. That's not there in the Mahabharata, the one kid escaped, at least in the original version of the Mahabharata. But anyway, Takshaka's family was killed, and Takshaka was really angry at the Pandavas because of that. And because he was really angry at the Pandavas, therefore he decided to destroy the whole dynasty. And he did that when he attacked Parikshit Maharaj. Of course, Parikshit Maharaj was cursed by this Brahmin boy named what? Starts with an S.
Yeah,
it's
son.
Sringi.
Yeah,
Sringi. And the reason Sringi cursed him was that why?
He He'll put a snake around his father's
neck. His father's neck. Samagarishi's neck. And so that's the cause of the beginning or the full manifestation of Kali. Because Kali was present before, but Parikshit Maharaj had sort of like contained him. Because he caught Kali doing what?
Cutting the
legs of the cow, of the bull. Torturing the cow and cutting the legs of the bull. And how many legs did he cut on the bull?
Three.
And it was one leg remaining. What was that leg?
Truthfulness.
And the present political administration of the United States has destroyed that leg.
I know.
No, he has very good qualities. I know. He has good qualities. Everybody has some good qualities, and everyone has a mixture. It's a mixture in Kali Yuga. So therefore, and then Parikshit Maharaj said to Kali, after Kali surrendered to him, he said, I'm not going to kill you, but you've got to live in four different places. You can live in four different places. Where?
Well, there is illicit sex, eating, gambling, and gold.
Not gold. Gold is last.
Gold is the last thing.
Yeah, gold is last. Yeah.
Gold is last. After Kali said, there's no place for me because...
Prostitution.
Yeah.
Gambling.
Liquor.
And what was the
other thing? Illicit sex?
Meat eating.
So Kali resides there. And there was no place where those things were going on. So Kali said, you got to give me another place. He said, wherever there is gold. Wherever there is gold. Does your mother have a lot of gold? Uh-oh. Kali.
Kali stays in gold. Kali stays in gold. Yeah, Kali stays in gold.
Whatever I got in the wedding is in the bank.
No, that's all right.
So the bank has Kali.
Now, when money is used for illicit purposes, it's not that money itself is a problem or gold itself is a problem. But when it's actually, one becomes very proud, like the crown, the gold crown on the king's head, one becomes very proud of his opulence. Like, Queen Kunti says, Janmaishwarya Shudasya Shibir, Edamana Dalpuman. Several things bewilder us in this world. And these things are so-called good birth. You know, like if someone says, I'm a Chaturvedi or Dwivedi, like we mentioned the other night, or I have a good Gotra. What's your Gotra? You don't know. You don't know your Gotra. Bharadwaj, that's a very good Gotra. My respects, my humble obeisances.
But he's not going to send his parents to hell.
At least you need to go to hell.
So Prabhupada instructed us to say when we go to the temple, because in temples sometimes they ask in India, what's your Gotra? To say Achyuta Gotra. Achyuta Gotra. That means we're descendants of Achyuta. We're devotees of Achyuta. Who is Krishna? Achyuta means infallible. Achyuta. Achyuta Gotra. So that's our Gotra. So, anyway, see what other stories can I tell? Any other stories from the Mahabharata? Or should we just go on to Bhagavatam? Okay. There's some stories. I have a rap song I wrote about Kali Yuga. Did you ever hear it?
No.
Tonight.
It's from the 12th canto of Bhagavatam. Symptoms of Kali Yuga.
No.
It goes, Kali Yuga is coming on fast already, God, 5,000 years past, people living underground, selling human flesh by the pound. Kali's got four places to go, he's everywhere now, you know. Illicit sex, intoxication is everywhere in our nation. Gambling and eating meat is you'll encounter on every street. So, anyway, it's a long poem. If you like
online,
Mark.
Like, no.
Not now.
Is it online also?
Yeah, it might be online. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe on this kind of desire to
be.
Don't
I be asking, right? So I've written a lot of poetry, you know, English poetry about Krishna and Kali Yuga.
It should be published then.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, the internet's good publishing. Yeah. Facebook is life. Jaya Radha Madhuba Kunja Bihari
Jaya Radha Madhuba Kunja Bihari
Jaya Radha Madhuba Kunja Bihari
Jaya Radha Madhuba
Gopi Jana Bala Bala Giri Baru Dante Gopi Jana Bala Bala Giri Baru Dante
Gopi Jana Bala Bala
Jai Om Vishnupad, Paramahansa Paramahacharya, Mosa Teta, Satashi Shimad, Divine Grace Abhaya Chadana, Bhaktivedanta Goswami, Marsha Prabhupada Kijaya, Iskan Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Kijaya, and Andagoti Vaishnava Vrindi Kijaya, Namacharya Srila Vidas Thakur Kijaya, Rem Seko Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadha Shri Vasati Gopi Bhakti Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopi Gopi Sayam Kundar Gunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavadam Kijai Churnam Kijai Navadiptam Kijai Jagannathaswami Kijai Yumanamai Kijai Shrimati Lasi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bhu. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gaur Ranga Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Okay. We have a lot of people watching. I'd like to welcome some of the people watching. Rasheshri, Bhagavat, Manaharini, Radha. From different places, we have people from the UK watching, from Croatia watching, and from Slovenia watching. Pretty good. And all over the world, actually.
It's been night over there.
Yeah, it's getting close to the nighttime in Europe. Okay, so I guess we'll just read where you have the marker. Just take our chances. Okay, reading from 6th Canto, Chapter 5, Text 42. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, so I'll just read the Sanskrit. Yannas tvam karma sandhanam sadunam griha medinam kritavannasi duramarsham vipriyam tabamarshatam. Just going to repeat. Yat.
Yes.
Which?
Which?
Naha.
Naha.
Unto us.
Unto us.
Tvam.
Tvam.
You. Karma sandhanam. Who strictly follow the fruitive ritualistic ceremonies according to Vedic injunctions. Sadunam, who are honest. Because we honestly seek elevated social standards and bodily comfort. Grihamedanam, although situated with a wife and children. Kritavanasi, have created. Duramarsham, unbearable. Vipriham,
wrong.
Tava,
your.
Marshatam, forgiven. Translation, although I live in household life with my wife and children, I honestly follow the Vedic injunctions by engaging in fruitive activities to enjoy life without sinful reactions. I have performed all kinds of yajnas, including the Deva Yajna, Rishi Yajna, Pitri Yajna, and Ri Yajna. Because these yajnas are called vratas or vows, I am known as a Griha Vrata. Unfortunately, you have given me great displeasure by misguiding my sons for no reason to the path of renunciation. This can be tolerated once. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Vijaya. Prajapati Daksha wanted to prove that he had been most tolerant in not having said anything when Narada Muni, for no reason, induced his 10,000 innocent sons to adopt the path of renunciation. Sometimes householders are accused of being Grihamedis, for Grihamedis are satisfied with family life without spiritual advancement. Grihasthas, however, are different because although Grihasthas live in household life with their wives and children, they are eager for spiritual advancement. Wanting to prove that he had been magnanimous to Narada Muni, Prajapati Daksha stressed that when Narada had misled his first sons, Daksha had taken no action. He had been kind and tolerant. He was aggrieved, however, because Narada Muni had misled his sons for a second time. Therefore, he wanted to prove that Narada Muni, although dressed like a sadhu, was not actually a sadhu. He himself, although a householder, was a greater sadhu than Narada Muni. Yannas tvam karma sandhanam sadhanam grihamedanam kritavannasi duramarsham vipriyam tapamarshatam. So Om Ganat Timadanda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Minitam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Maha. So, of course, this is the middle of the very interesting story in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this story is Narada Muni's preaching to the sons of Daksha. Daksha, of course, is one of the sons of Lord Brahma, and he is a Prajapati. Everyone knows what Prajapati is? It means someone who is supposed to have a lot of children to fill the universe up. Because somehow or other you got to fill the universe up. It's empty in the beginning. So Daksha's business was like that. Daksha, Kashyapa, others, Kardama Muni, others, even though they're great devotees, some of them pure devotees, they're Prajapatis. Daksha was not a pure devotee of the Lord by any stretch of the imagination. You know, he had a lot of pride, evidenced, of course, in his dealings with Lord Shiva and how ultimately his own daughter renounced him, Sati renounced him, and immolated or burnt herself because she was so fried out with her father's disrespect towards her husband, Lord Shiva. So, anyway, so Daksha, the word Daksha means someone who's expert. Now, it's actually listed as one of the qualities of a pure devotee. Did you know that? Daksha means expert. a pure devotee should be expert in this material world in many different areas. Like Prabhupada was very expert. Being expert means not simply that one knows how to do everything, but one knows how to get everything done by engaging other people in doing it. There was an interesting story that Prabhupada told in that regard. How an intelligent person, he doesn't have to know how, specifically how to do everything, but he can get anything done by engaging others. The story is, of course, what's that? You heard the story?
No, it was just another English story they made up, but there was a small story on this guy. He has to whitewash a building, and he doesn't want to on a weekend. Then he engages, he tells other boys it's really fun, then he gets them to do it.
That's Tom Sawyer.
Yeah, Tom Sawyer, yeah.
That's not a story Prabhupada told. But, so the story that Prabhupada told about how to, you know, how to engage others in Krishna consciousness. It's very, a very interesting story. Let me remember all the details of it. But, oh yes, Prabhupada told a story about Henry Ford. Henry Ford was the person who started the Ford Motor Company. You heard about that before? There's a type of car. And so one time he was accused in the press of being unintelligent because he didn't know anything about technology. And so he took these people to court. He was suing them. And the court and the judge said, how can you prove that you're intelligent? You know something about technology. And Henry Ford said, I guess it was in his office or something. He said, see this row of buttons? If I push this button, a technologist will come and answer any questions that I have. So who is more intelligent, me or the technologist? So, obviously, he was more intelligent. He knew more technology than the technologist because he knew how to use the technologist without wasting his human form of life to learn all the technology. So, that's daksha. That's how a pure devotee is daksha. And also, a pure devotee is daksha because he knows the reason for everything. That's, in philosophy, that's called teleology. What is the purpose of the reason for it? He knows how to engage everything in Krishna's service. Okay, so daksha was called expert because he was simply expert grihamedi. Now, what does the word grihamedi mean? Not just householder. It refers to what?
Attached.
Attached, but no. What does it directly refer to? Does anyone know? Refers to a bull that is tied, or there's a nose ring on a bull. And then the bull has a nose ring, and then he goes around simply in a circle. Doesn't get anywhere. That's what a grihamedi is. He just got, there's no ultimate purpose in life except for just, you know, reproduce. Just like before I joined the Hare Krishna movement, my mother had said, you should become a grihamedi. I said, what's the purpose of life? She said, well, the purpose of life is to get married and have grandchildren. For me, for her. Yeah. And I said, why? And she said, that's the purpose. And then those children will have more children. And then their children will have more, and the children of the children will have more children. The children of the children and the children of the children and the children of the children and the, anyway, you get it. And that's the whole purpose of life. The whole purpose of life is just to reproduce, have offspring, so they can have offspring, so you can enjoy your grandchildren. Isn't that? What do you think, Adiyuruda? Is that a good purpose?
No.
So, that's what grihamedi means. Whereas a grihastha is an ashram. An ashram means ashraya, like a shelter for the material energy, where Krishna consciousness is cultivated. That's the difference. But daksha was a grihamedi, expert grihamedi, because he could have a lot of children at one time. The first group of children he had were 10,000 children. I mean, Anirudha, you have enough trouble fighting with your sister. But if you had 10,000...
that would be fun.
Wouldn't be fun, you'd be killing each other.
Yeah.
So the first group, they were called the Haryasvas. The first group of sons he had were called the Haryashvas. There were 10,000. And then he thought, the business of life is simply to encourage my children to become Grihamedis too, like my mother was thinking. And they should perform austerities so they can have children. So they went to perform all these austerities. And Narada Muni comes along while they're performing austerities. And Narada Muni is very tricky, you know, but says things like, do you know who your actual father is? And obviously he means Krishna. And so he preaches to them in an indirect way in the beginning, you know, a little tricky way. Convinces them, and all 10,000 of them take sannyas. That's pretty good. Yeah, a lot of sannyasis at once, more than all the ISKCON devotees combined. So Dacha gets a little upset, you know, created these 10,000 kids, you know. Let me try again. All right. So this time, that's right again. So this time he has 1,000 kids. They're called Savalasras or something like that. And guess what happens? Narada Muni does the same thing. And all of his sons, and you know, the reason he's frustrated is because, not simply because it's his service, he's frustrated because he wants to enjoy the grandchildren. Isn't it? Like the parents are looking to the children sometimes. When are you going to grow up and get married and give us little grandchildren so we can take care of? And it's interesting, the grandparents, sometimes they have a closer relationship with the kids than the parents do. And they have more time to spend because they're not working either. Isn't that? So it's just like, oh, little grandchild. Rockabye baby on the treetop. Right? So Adachi was thinking, I want to enjoy my grandchildren. And that's actually quite interesting. I mean, you think, oh yeah. My mother is often complains because she has no grandchildren. Anyway, even my brother didn't have any of his own children. No. He worships other people's feet. He's a podiatrist. He's a doctor of feet, so he does the opposite of what I do.
Oh, he's smelling feet. That smell feet
thing. He bathes and cuts people's toenails. And my business, I go to people's houses and they don't cut my toenails, but they bathe my feet. So he's very concerned because his whole family line is being, the genetic line is being cut off. You know, genealogy here. And so he gets super upset with Narada Muni, and at this particular juncture, he's getting ready to curse Narada Muni. So he thinks that the worst curse I can give Narada Muni is that he can't settle down.
Because, he can't preach for more than...
Yeah, so he just says, I curse you never to remain anywhere for any length of time. And Narada Muni, he's just like, Hari Bol. This is the best curse I ever had. I can travel all the time. A similar thing happened to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was having his kirtans in the house of Shivastak or Shivasanga. And when he was having these kirtans, they had a guard at the door. They wouldn't let anyone in who wasn't a pure devotee. Sometimes people snuck in. One time, Srivastava's mother-in-law snuck in. And Lord Chaitanya complained because the kirtan had no ecstasy. So they just chucked her out the door. Chucked her out. Yeah. The story's there. And then another time, you know, some Brahmin snuck in, but later on he was forgiven. So Daksha was thinking, you know, get back to Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya was cursed by this person because I was locked out. You will be locked out of your house. And Lord Chaitanya accepted that, and then later on he took sannyas because of that. Because when you're sannyasi, you're not supposed to go back to your village or your home, or what to speak of the wife. You just like have no more home. But sannyas means death. Did you know that? Civilly dead.
No.
That one has no more material responsibilities. to society, friendship, and love, and everything like that. Of course, even though that's true, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita as the best devotee of a mother. It's very interesting. He was always devoted to his mother. That's very, very interesting. So that relationship is never broken, even at the time of sannyas. I have a good relationship with my mother, too. She's only 90. That's young.
No.
So anyway, getting back to the point of daksha. So daksha curses Narada Muni. Narada Muni is very happy with that. And the only place he can remain is in Braj. You understand, Braj? He has this place in near Govardhan called Narada Kund, where he has his ashram. Anyone's been there? Anyone's been there with me?
I think
I took you there. I pointed out, I didn't go there with you, but I pointed out where it was. And there's an interesting story about that. Is that once upon a time, Narada Muni wanted to see Krishna's Rasa Leela dance. And so he went there, and there was someone guarding the Rasa Leela dance. It was a lady. Her name was Gopishwara Mahadev. Lord Shiva in the form of a lady. Because only ladies are allowed to see the Rasa dance, other than Krishna, of course. So what happened is that Shiva stopped Narada Muni. He said, you cannot go to see the Rasa dance because you're a man. And Narada Muni said, I really want to go see. So it was arranged that he would bathe in the Kushima Sarova and come out as a gopi. And that gopi's name was Naradi. Naradi. So
Naradi.
What's that?
Could he switch back or not?
We'll tell
him. Would he stand out of it?
So even in the Vedic literatures, you have sex changes for a higher purpose. So anyway, so he went in to see the Rasa dance. Krishna noticed him and said, Narada Muni, what are you doing here? He said, I want to see the Rasa dance. And Krishna said, well, I got something else for you to do. You should write literatures about me, especially the Narada Bhakti Sutras and the Narada Pancharatra details about deity worship. And you stay here at Govardhan. And Narada said, I can't stay at Govardhan because I've been cursed to travel. And Krishna says, well, the rules of the material world don't apply in the holy Dham. So you can stay here. So he stayed there. Not only did he write these books, these literatures, but he actually gave shelter to Kayadu there. You know who Kayadu is?
Ranikashipu's wife.
That's Ranikashipu's wife, the mother of who?
Prahlad
Maharaj. And he preached to her there. So all these different pastimes happened right there. So then, getting back to daksha. So daksha had cursed Narada Muni, so he thought, I gotta somehow or other have grandchildren. You know, this Narada Muni rascal keeps interfering with all my plans to have to have grandchildren. Because that's what he says in this verse. In Narada Muni, you think, you know, you're a sadhu, but you're a sadhu. The word sadhu comes from the word sat, which means establishing eternality or spirituality, like dasato vijate bhavo, nabhavo vijate sataha ubayor api drishtavantas tvanivas tavadarshavi. As the Bhagavad Gita tells us, that the sages, the sadhus, consider those things that are temporary as unreal. And those things that are eternal as real. So, daksha thinks, well, somehow or other you gotta have children. So then he has 9 daughters. And he says, Narada Muni is not gonna convince them to take sannyas. I don't have to worry. So he didn't worry about Narada Muni convincing, because Narada Muni didn't try to convince them to take sannyas. Of course, sometimes the ladies ask, why can't ladies take sannyas? That's a typical question we get when we tell the story. And the reason is that ladies are better devotees than men. Because the men need the prestige of being a sannyasi. But the ladies can be renounced without any prestige. So there is a renounced order for ladies, you know, where they put on white and everything like that. And there's, in our Pacific succession, there's many women gurus, too. I mean, there's Janaka Mata and many others. Ganga Mata Goswamini, I mean, many others. So the ladies in Krishna consciousness, which we follow the Pancharatri system and Bhagavat system, the ladies are equal. Everything's equal. There's no discrimination as far as any particular service that the ladies can do in Krishna consciousness. So, therefore, Vidaksha, he had these nine girls, and he got them married. Of course, one of them he got married to, Lord Shiva. And later on, because he offended Lord Shiva, he sort of lost his head, literally. He got a new head transplant. You remember that story?
Yeah.
He got a goat head. So, Daksha's material attachments, what we can learn from this story, is Daksha's material attachments cause him to offend Vaishnavas. And so, one has to be able to control their attachments. How do you control your attachments? By giving the results to Krishna and understanding success or failure is up to Krishna in whatever you're doing. Whether you want to have grandchildren, or you want to preach Krishna consciousness, or build a temple, or whatever you want to do, we should not be attached to the results. Because Krishna is the enjoyer of the results. And in order not to be attached to the results, we have to become prideless. And getting back to the verse that I was quoting from the prayers of Queen Kunti, Janmaishvarya Shrutasya Shibir, Enamana Adapuman. She says, we are full of pride because we are attached to our so-called good birth, you know, like we were talking about before. You have a nice gotra.
I should now say achyuta
gotra. That's nice too. Janmaishvarya, we're attached to opulence. Isn't it? If someone has a lot of money, they're very proud. I mean, extremely proud. You've seen this. I'm not going to give examples. But people become very proud when they have money. Not everybody. I mean, some people, like King Prataparudra, he wasn't very proud because he was a great devotee. But money, it corrupts people. You know, makes people proud. I mean, I'll give you a practical example in my own life because I don't have a lot of money. But one time, when my father passed away, I thought I was going to inherit a lot of money. So I was thinking, now everyone will have to listen to me in the Hare Krishna movement. Because I was remembering the story of Ambarish, one of my godbrothers. When he went to Mayapur, they had elephants greeting him. And you know, everybody came out to greet him, big kirtan. When I go to Mayapur, nobody greets me. So that's because he has money. Somebody? Maybe. Maybe someone greets me. I have to carry my own bags. So I was thinking, you know, oh, when I inherit all this money, then people will listen to me more. So I found out after reading the will, the only thing my father left me was a gun. Because he left everything. He was married to his second wife, so he left everything to her. So, anyway, so my pride was...
You threw the gun away?
No.
You still have it?
I still have it to protect Krishna's property.
Wait, you have a gun?
Yes. It's legal. Uh-huh. It's legal in America.
Whoa.
He's excited.
He's excited. He's a kshatriya.
I never saw it.
All right. So anyway, Janmaishvarya and then Shrutasya. One is proud because they have a lot of learning. You know, when people are very intelligent, you know, they're overly intelligent, Prabhupada would say. So they're very proud. You can't tell them anything. And then finally, Shri Bir means one who's very beautiful or attractive or handsome. That's very bad. Of course, not that everyone should make themselves ugly. The ladies should have their teeth taken out. And, you know, but it's actually dangerous, like the story of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. When he first saw Lord Chaitanya was as a sannyasi. Lord Chaitanya was very young. He was like 24 years old when he took sannyasi. And he's quite a handsome man. And he was very concerned about Lord Chaitanya being able to keep sannyasi. So therefore, he tried to instruct Lord Chaitanya in Vedanta. There's a story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And of course, Lord Chaitanya, he eventually ended up preaching to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and convincing him to surrender. So that's another story. But still, all these things are bewildering. If one has any type of opulence in this world, whether it's money, it's a good birth, whether it's learning or some bodily beauty, one has to be very, very careful. Because these things can bewilder one. And then finally, Queen Kunti says, Twama Kinchana Gochara, that Krishna is the property of those who basically have nothing in this world. But having nothing means that you may use many things in Krishna's service. You may use money, you may use your position or whatever, prestige in Krishna's service, but understand it doesn't belong to you. As stated in the 15th chapter of the Gita, Nirvana Moha Jita Sangha Dosha, Vyatma Nitya Vanibhrita Kama, Dvandvara Vimuktar, Subhadupi Sangyara Gachanti Mudam, Padamaviyanta, that one has to be free of this false prestige. Nirmana. And also Lord Chaitanya says, Amanina, what? Manadena. One has to be free of this desire for respect. And one becomes free by offering respects to others, which Daksha did not want to do. He should have bowed down to me. But he was thinking, I'm better. That's what this verse says. So any questions or comments about these points?
Well, you said that this wealth or beauty or this thing is dangerous.
Dangerous,
but at
yeah.
the same time, they are Krishna's... they said in the Gita also that whenever you see...
In opulence.
It is...
yeah, but whenever you think you own those things, rather than Krishna owns those things.
Oh.
These are the opulences of Krishna.
So thinking...
Not the opulences of me. Let's say if I have something in this world, let's say if I'm intelligent, let's say if I have money or whatever it is, that is just Krishna lending me his opulences to use in his service. As soon as I begin to think, so much wealth is mine today, so much more will I get today, tomorrow, he is my enemy, I have conquered him, you know, become proud of it, then thinking it's mine, then that's a fall down. And ultimately it's taken away. As they say, when you're born into this world, what are you born with? Hey, Aniruddha, what are you born with when you come into this world?
A book. Try to go back with a book.
You're the first person I ever met who was born with a book in his
hand. Karn was born with a book.
With a book?
No, Karna was born with an
object. Yeah, but his father was who? The sun god. And that was an immaculate conception. That means, you know, it wasn't like a normal birth in the hospital like that. He was born in the hospital.
And I don't even know whether that's true or not.
You don't know whether that's true or not?
Mom says that.
Is your father the sun god?
Bhaskar means sun.
He is very tricky.
When that is all right, we don't think that it is ours, but Krishna also says that when you see that in others, that somebody more wealthy or whatever, then that is my opulence, right?
Yeah, we understand. It's always Krishna's opulence.
Yeah, so we don't respect them for that.
No, Krishna takes these things away too. When we leave this body, we can't leave with anything. As they say even in Christianity, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, dust thou art, and dust thou will be. So this body is like that. The body will become, I mean this body that we're very proud of will become ashes or food for worms. You know what the Parshis do? They feed it to the vultures. That's his body. And that's the body that you're proud of, Aniruddha. We'll become like that. And Krishna is lending us things. We don't own the body. We didn't come up with the ingredients for the body. We didn't design the body. Krishna has given us this. It's meant to be used as if we're borrowing it from Krishna, right? Right? And when you're borrowing something from someone, you should use that thing for the person who's lending it to you. Let's say if you borrow, let's say if you're a chauffeur, you know what a chauffeur is? What's a chauffeur?
They sell the books.
What?
They sell the books.
Sell the books?
Sell the books.
No, chauffeur. A chauffeur is someone who drives a car for you.
Oh, chauffeur.
Chauffeur. Anyway. I have to learn new pronunciation. It's someone who drives, you know, a driver. Let's say, like in India, everybody has a driver, right? He sleeps in the car. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I see that all the time. The driver, like, lives in the car. He just takes a bath with a bucket outside, and he's always there. In America, you don't have drivers like that. You got to pay them salaries.
You have the father and mother.
Yeah, the father and mother. So let's say you have a driver of your car in India. And one day, he decides the car belongs to him. And he just goes off and has fun with it. What will happen?
He'll get beaten out
of his job. Yeah, he'd lose his job. So in the same way, if we think this body, mind, opulence, whatever we have belongs to us, then we're cheaters, we're thieves. Understand? Okay, any other questions or comments? Yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned that in ISKCON, you know, there are women gurus and everything like that.
We will have women gurus. We don't have any formal women gurus yet.
Okay. And here in America, I see that women offering and doing the aarti in the temples also.
Yeah.
But in India, they don't do that.
Yeah. So what's the question?
So is it because we in ISKCON treat women as a soul level, or...
It's because we're actually influenced by some Bengali culture, which we shouldn't be influenced by. Because when Prabhupada was on the planet, he had devotees like Malati and Yamuna right on the stage in front of everybody else worshiping the deity. He had them leading kirtan, and he had them giving class in front of like 10, 20,000 people at once. So if you examine how Prabhupada did things, Prabhupada was completely transcendental. And Prabhupada acted in terms of what Lord Chaitanya wanted. And he wasn't concerned with some, let's say, what some lower class people might be concerned with. He wanted to do what Krishna did, wanted. And Prabhupada was successful. Prabhupada was successful. So unfortunately, you know, to a large extent, some members of ISKCON have been influenced by conservative culture in India, some aspects of conservative culture in India. And actually the majority of India is not conservative, at least the educated people, they're not conservative. The most famous guru in India is actually a lady. Of course, yeah, she goes around hugging people. But So, I'm not saying that we should do that. The ladies should just start hugging everybody and then... But the point is, India in general is not so chauvinistic nowadays. There's some remnants of that due to the previous invasions of the Muslims. You know, the previous Muslim culture that was there. But you find people in general that, you know, they very much accept in India. But unfortunately, some of us are more conservative than... Prabhupada, as they say, what does that say? More religious than the Pope. You know, Prabhupada did something, why shouldn't he do it? I mean, Prabhupada is the acharya, he set the example. And Prabhupada has there's a letter that he wanted all of his sons and daughters to eventually become spiritual leaders if they were qualified. If they were qualified. There's letters like that. And so anyway, right now in ISKCON, all these things are being discussed. Tell you a funny story. One year I was the GBC chairman, many years ago. Actually, that was the year I came to Fiji for the first time. That was in 1998 or something like that, whatever it was. 1998. I came to Fiji because I was supposed to solve a problem there, which I wasn't able to solve. But anyway. But Tamal Krishnamurti liked it so much they asked me to become GBC after that point. That was the Nishina problem. You know about that. So as the chairman, I was informed of different problems. One of the problems was that the ladies in Vrindavan were not allowed to go to see the in front of the deities. Can you imagine that? Mm-hmm. That's in Vrindavan. The ladies were just like pushed to the back during the programs. And so some of the ladies wrote to me. One of them, one name was Parvati. You may know Parvati there. And then I was bold enough. I sent a order. I said, ladies have to have equal facility in front of the deities. This is a funny ending to the story. And so, what happened is that, yes, then they started to listen to me. And, you know, people complain, you know, with this sannyasi, what is he giving orders? But he's the chairman of the GBC, we have to follow him. So, all right, so then shortly thereafter, I went to Vrindavan to see how everything was going, to take darshan of the deities. So as I was going in front of Radha Shyam Sundar, the lady started pushing me away.
Yeah,
the lady says, no, not quite like that. Not quite as bad as that. They just said, get out of the way. I want to see that. You know how it is really pushing now in front of the deities? And the ladies are pushing the men out of the way. And so I went to the temple president, and I said, how can you allow, you know, ladies to push everybody away? And he said to me, it's your fault. You gave them that facility. So this is your reaction. Not karmic, but, you know, some sort of reaction. So, you know, I've always, in my position in ISKCON, always established that ladies would have equal facility, equal right to service and everything like that. I was the first one to appoint the lady to be a temple president in ISKCON. And now, of course, there's many ladies that are temple presidents. So.
Yes, a lady without a husband, Maharaj?
A lady without a husband is a temple president?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? Well, sometimes you have a man without a wife. I was going to say man without a husband, but anyway, you're a man without a wife.
Man without
a wife. I mean, sometimes you can't discriminate. Let's say, well, we can't appoint a lady without a husband because everyone's going to be looking at her and she's going to be looking at everybody to try to get married. Yeah. So then, but you turn that around and you say, why should you appoint a man without a wife? Because he's going to be looking at all the girls in the temple to get married too. So there has to be equal facility. I mean, we're spirit souls. Aren't we spirit souls? When I last checked, I was a spirit soul. Yeah, we're not this body, we're spirit souls. In the beginning days of the movement, before we were in, you know, before devotees were informed that the opposite sex was Maya, people were relating to each other just as like brothers and sisters. You know, there was no problem. There was no problem in the early days. I remember the early days. You know, it's just like, you know, would you like to do the service? We'd like to do that. So nobody was thinking, you know, there's Maya Devi there. but after after the first sannyasis got back from India, then, you know, in Bengali culture, they instituted this whole, like, extreme separation between men and women. So that people were thinking, oh, there's Maya. Maya Devi, Maya Dave, you know.
Maya Dave.
So there became much more attention to that factor. And, it was no need. It was like a big family when I first joined the movement. And you'll hear that from a lot of devotees who joined in the early days. It was a big family, you know, men, women, everything like that. You know, you don't think about someone being an agent of Maya unless you're told they're an agent of Maya. Yeah.
I have a question. Like you are a married couple, and then like you want your wife to be submissive to you.
Just tie her up.
how extend the wife should be submissive to the husband?
It's a partnership. You know, the wife and the husband are partners in serving Krishna. I mean, you read about these Vedic models, but actually in the Vedic models, you have Draupadi who was chastising the Pandavas. You know, she basically lost faith in their ability to protect her after that whole gambling match thing. And she was telling them, I mean, she was really bossy. She said, I'm not going to tie my hair up until this Dushashan's blood is like on the hair, you know, until you kill Dushashan. So she was, I mean, even when they were in the kingdom of Virat, that she insisted that Bhimsen kill Kichika. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't see her as like a very submissive wife.
She was ruling over five.
She's what?
She was ruling over five.
Yeah, she's ruling over five of them. And then you have Mandodari, who was talking back to Ravan. Yeah. You know, she was telling Ravan, you know, just give seed to bed. Ravan was getting angry. Ravan was almost ready to kill her. But, you know, so she wasn't just like a blind follower of her husband. So you look at all these examples, and you don't have these wives who just stayed in the kitchen and just like rolled rotis all the time. I mean, Fiji is like that, you know.
I think, because I think the dictionary meaning of submissive is taken literally.
Yeah.
And that's not what Prabhupada meant.
No, Prabhupada didn't mean that. I mean, both of them should be submissive to the Guru and Krishna.
Right.
And if the husband is more advanced, then that's one thing. If the wife is more advanced, it's another thing. I mean, there's that story, I told that story about Guru Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. She was approached by a couple that just got married. And they asked, you know, what is our duty? And he told the husband, your duty is to cook for your wife. You know, because he just thought he thought he had a servant. And people get married because they just want a servant.
Repeat again. I think she wants to hear this.
I said people get married just because they want a servant. And actually they get very disappointed. They get very disappointed because, you know, before they get married, she's ironing his clothes, making flower garlands for him.
Last one year,
I know. And then but what happens is after the child is born, then the child becomes the center of attention for the wife, and the poor husband is left without anyone to love him anymore or serve him anymore.
Then the husband gets agitated.
The husband gets agitated and angry, you know, you're supposed to serve me. But actually the mother is supposed to serve the child. No, they both should serve each other. That's the point. Amani na manadena. That we're actually servants. The husband should think I'm serving my wife, and the wife should think she's serving the husband. Just like even the disciple-guru relationship, it's like that. The guru is thinking I'm serving the disciples, giving them Krishna. Not that they're meant to serve me. That's false ego. If you think you're a guru, you're guru.
Guru, what does that mean?
Like a cow or an ass.
Cows is a very...
What?
No.
Like we were talking about the psychophysical nature of the bodies.
Yeah.
How do we balance this? You know, someone in a, like you said, you know, we look at everyone as a spiritual living entity.
Yeah.
Now then we have these bodies, we have male body, female body.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it kind of seems like, you know, a little contradictory, at least to me, you know, like...
Well, there's a certain nature of the body. I mean, the men don't go have babies, that's
yeah.
for sure.
So...
I haven't seen that happen. I mean, like Prabhupada gave that example. Yes, I mean, but there's women who are Kshatriyas, women who are Brahmanas, women who are Vaishyas, women who are Shudras. I mean, why else would someone's Varna be considered when there's marriage? You understand? That's a very important consideration. I mean, for example, if you're, let's say if you're a Brahman and your wife is a Vaishya, then you're going to be sitting chanting Hare Krishna all the time, and your wife's going to say, get the hell out of here, make some money for me. It's not a very pleasant... Not a very pleasant match. You know, so people should be of, you know, similar qualities. Unless one agrees to accept the Varna of the other, which is really hard. It's really, really hard.
How that is determined, Maharaj? Nowadays, how they determine what's the Varna?
That's easy. You do that when they're 6 months old.
Oh, what is it? You put the books inside the books.
Yeah, you do astrology, you put the books in front of them.
What did I choose? What did I choose?
You chose a book.
No.
No, but that is not a very scientific way, Maharaj. Somebody can...
No, but also later on in life, it's pretty obvious. You can determine someone's varna. What can you do for 12 hours a day without going crazy?
Make money.
Make money? All right, so that's Vaishya. That's fine. You can be a pure devotee, Vaishya. Do it. Go ahead. Make millions of dollars. If you're going to make money, don't make just a little bit. Make a lot. As Prabhupada said, shoot for the rhinoceros. That means if you're going to go shooting, shoot for something big. And if you can't do it, everyone will say it couldn't be done anyway. And if you do it, everyone will worship you. So therefore, understand your varna. It's very easy to understand. What can you do? Not only what can you do, because we can do a lot of things. I mean, for example, I can do a lot of things. I know how to fix cars. I know how to work on computer. Yeah.
Oh,
I used to do that when I was a kid, when I got my first sports car. I know how to do that, but I can't do it for more than an hour. It just drives me crazy. So therefore, you know, probably not a Shudra, but I can speak about Krishna, read, chant, and do study for the whole day. And, you know, I can study, read books all day long, and I'm happy. I love to acquire knowledge. When I was young, I would just read the encyclopedia for fun. Nowadays they don't have encyclopedias anymore. It's all Wikipedia.
Wikipedia.
You haven't heard about that before?
No, it comes along.
Wikipedia. So I used to do that for fun. That was my fun. So that's Brahminical. So I understand I'm mostly Brahminical. So, like, if you like to fight or protect people, Kshatriya likes to protect people, right? What if someone's being attacked? Will you protect them? Mm-hmm. No. He's trying to figure out his varna. Do you like money? No.
Sannyasi.
Do you like to work with your hands?
No.
No. He doesn't like anything.
I like reading.
He's outside the varnashram culture. You like reading?
He likes bossing.
So he's like a mixture of Kshatriya and Brahma.
You want everybody to be submissive.
Half Kshatriya and half Brahma, maybe.
So anyway, it's pretty easy to determine your varna. It's not.
So it's not the astrological chart.
I wouldn't use the astrological chart. It's like what you can do all day long and like it. Be happy doing it. You know, for Krishna. You know, if someone that really likes to make money all day long, that's their varna. And they can be a pure devotee by doing that all day long for Krishna.
So I know what I can do all day long without me.
What?
I can crack peanuts all day long. I think that's fun.
All right. So any other questions? It's an interesting class.
I have a question.
Yeah.
This is just regarding reading and chanting.
Yeah.
And so since being quite a new devotee, I was sort of like wondering, now I've taken on chanting 16 rounds a day, but I feel like I want to gain more knowledge and I want to read more books. And sometimes when I'm just chanting, I try and get them done before 3 o'clock because then I don't want to be up late chanting.
3 o'clock in the morning?
In the afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm not sort of that, up to it yet. But all I think about doing while I'm also chanting is that I just want to be reading more books, because I've sort of started reading like 4 different books.
Nice.
So I just want to like find a sort of balance where I'm not feeling at the moment, you know, because I'm just learning, how I can sort of balance the chanting and the reading, because obviously I'm not getting the chanting done so early in the day.
How about getting up early?
Well, I knew you were
going to
say that.
All right, so you know that. So try getting up, going to sleep earlier.
Yeah.
And then you get up earlier. I mean, I have no problem. I usually have, when I'm at the temple, I usually have most of my rounds done before Mangal Arati.
Yeah.
And then I finish real quickly. And then I can do any damn thing.
Any damn thing.
So you, I would say get them done as early as possible. Learn how to chant quicker, faster rounds. How fast do you chant your rounds?
I can get them done really fast.
How many minutes for each round?
Well, I haven't really counted. Maybe like 5 minutes.
Oh, that's good.
Is it?
Is well, if you can do a 5 minute round, which I do, that's I do a 5 minute
you
round.
Do 5 minute round. I do 5 minute rounds. I read somewhere Prabhupada said, where was it I read it? Not to chant too fast where you're not actually even pronouncing the words.
Prabhupada chanted 5 minute rounds.
He did? Okay.
Yeah. 5 minutes is about good for a round.
Okay.
And that means, you know, chant a 5 minute round and within an hour and a half you got your rounds done.
Yeah. Unless you get distracted and you have to do other things.
Go for a walk.
Just go away from people.
Yeah. Don't try to chant where you live. Don't try to chant around other people.
Yeah.
It's a funny story. In ISKCON, once upon a time, and during the morning program, you know, the japa time in the morning program, we had a reporter come in just to, you know, report on what's happening with the Hare Krishna movement, just participate in the morning program. So she came in and she was taking notes and everything like that. And then she said, oh, you had this nice ceremony, you know, Mangalarti, where you all chanted and everything. And she said, then after that, you had your social time. Social time, no, because the devotees had their hands on the bead bag when they were talking with each other. So what I've done in our temple in North Carolina is I prohibit people from talking during the japa time. I said, and if they start talking, I yell. Not yell bad. What happens is there was one lady who was really into talking. And every time she started talking, I would just go, Hare Krishna! Hare Krishna! And she got the message. So, it's better not to... It's better not to chant where you do your work, where you have your computer, where you have your bedroom or anything like that. I mean, here I'm chanting in the bedroom, but it's better to chant in a special place for chanting. That's what I find. And then you have a sankalpa before. You realize why you're chanting. And you pray to Krishna. And then you get your job. If you can do a 5 minute round, you're going to have your job done an hour and a half. Easily, an hour and a half. So, and you try to do it early, because later in the day it's really hard. It's like a struggle to be concentrated on spiritual things. I mean, even reading is best done in the early morning, reading is also best done at night before you take rest, because then you remember what you read. In the evening, yeah, but the middle of the day is so hard, it's so passionate, you know, things are happening, the mobile phone is going off.
Yes.
People around, but you know, early in the morning, everyone's sleeping. It's really a nice time in the morning. I mean, this morning I was up before 4, so it was nice. Before Aniruddha started screaming. He was screaming until late last night. So anyway. I've tried to structure my day so I get up early in the morning. And it's not, you know, some people say, oh, here's an excuse that everyone says, not everyone, a lot of people say, he said, I'm a night person. You hear this all the time. Well, in my own experience, I was a night person before. I used to, before I joined the movement, I would go to sleep like at 1 o'clock in the morning, get up late in the morning, you know, 11 o'clock was kind of early in the morning to be getting up. And so it was an adjustment in the beginning, but now that I've adjusted, you know, the bodily clock, so to speak, then I automatically get up early, even with that. 99% of the days I get up without any alarm going off. Because it's, you know, automatic. Get up early, and it's great to get up early. It's just like so peaceful.
Cool. To sleep early, Maharaj, you can get up, but the problem is sometimes with this, when we have the bhakti program, it lasts till 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, then how...
Yeah, well, that's the problem. With Indian Fiji programs, or the you know, people start getting into it at 11 or 12 o'clock at night. We have one devotee in Fiji who starts programs at 8 o'clock at night. Isn't it? You know, when I go there, you know, actually because I'm GBC of Fiji, I said, when does the program start? He said, well, 8 o'clock at night, Maharaj. I said, that's my bedtime. And then, but somehow or other I get up and then I rest during the day. But then I'm up till, you know, I stay at the program till about 9:30, 10 o'clock. And then I hear it goes on till 2 in the morning. Isn't that true? There's this culture, I guess an Indian culture or something like that, that nighttime is the time to, you know, have fun. And then the kids, after the programs at night, have taken so much sugar, they're so wired up. You know, I've gone out to so many people's homes that they're up till 3 in the morning bouncing off the walls of the house. Isn't that true?
I got a lemonade high.
Well, Janmashtami, we have this, you know, Janmashtami. We have to get up late, and then it lasts till 2, 3 o'clock because the prasadam will be.
Yeah.
So is it there, most of these births of the Lord are midnight, you know, like Jesus Christ, right?
It's only Janmashtami that
Christmas. Well, Jesus Christ also, the Christmas is midnight. And then,
first of all, Jesus Christ was not born on Christmas.
Yeah. Oh,
on December 25th. He was born later in the year. They picked December 25th because it's the winter solstice. Because there was a pagan holiday on that particular day, so the Christians, in order to, you know, attract people to Christianity, decided to have December 25th. Which is the winter solstice. And then Easter, or when Jesus Christ was crucified, was not during the time when we know as Easter. They picked Easter because that's the spring equinox.
No.
That means when the day and the night are equal. Equal. And so, because that was a pagan holiday, as far as the Easter egg, that was actually a pagan rite, fertility rite. And as far as the name Easter, it comes from the pagan goddess Oestre. What? Oestre. O-E-S-T-R-A or something like that. I may not have the spelling right. But, so all these, they adopted things.
Janmashtami is according to the...
Janmashtami is midnight. That's the one midnight time we have.
And then we have next day Prabhupada's birth.
Yeah, so you...
So it's like, you know, it becomes, you are up all night, it's and then fun. Next day you are get up early because Prabhupada's
there. Well, I'll tell you how I do it.
It's fun.
I'll give you my secret.
Okay.
I don't eat the feast.
Yeah, when you wake up. Yeah.
That way I can wake up.
Yeah, don't eat the
you food. Know, obviously, if at 1:30 at night you're eating this heavy feast, mm-hmm. you're going to be like death warmed over the next morning. Right? I mean, obviously, I just take a little fruit to break my fast, and then I'm up in the morning. And then, you know, because practically speaking, you know, really, if you want to observe Janmashtami, you're not supposed to have a feast at midnight.
Oh.
That's a concession for the people who are attached to their tongues. The traditional way of celebrating Janmashtami is that the feast for Janmashtami is the next day. It's called Nandotsava. That means Utsava, festival of Nanda Maharaj. Then, that is the feast. And most Vaishnava holidays, the feast is supposed to be the next day. That may come as a shock to you, even like Gaur Purnima. The feast is supposed to be the next day.
People just want to break the fast.
No, we have the feast the same day because people are not going to come the next day.
Yeah.
And people are attached to their tongues. Of all the senses, the tongue is the most voracious and uncontrollable. So, you know, you got to satisfy the tongue. It's like, anyway, I'm not going to get into it again, not to start criticizing.
That's how they celebrate in Jaipur temple.
Yeah.
The Govindavati temple, they don't have any feast on Janmashtami.
It's the next day.
They will just give you some Ekadashi prasadam.
Yeah. That's the point.
The next day people will come to celebrate.
Yeah, the celebration is the next day. Yeah, it's a Nandotsava. another utsava.
Gadaji Prasad also didn't take quite a large quantity.
No, no, no. They just give a little laddu. That's it.
Little laddu to break the fast.
To break the fast.
That's the tradition in India.
Nothing else.
Because who wants to eat at midnight? Except Rani Ruda. All right, so I think we have to end now, or
yeah,
it's a long class.
At the picnic time, we have a question.
Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. We have a lot of people watching. Oh, Andrea, you're watching. It's good to see you. Haven't seen you for a long time. It'd be nice to meet sometime. Amala Prema. Let's see everybody. This is ISKCON Sacramento. ISKCON. We're all ISKCON.
TV
Yamunamai. And that's Aniruddha, the most precocious person. All right, all glories, bro.